we want to get some background on where you guys started. I know you guys are a nonprofit. You've been around for a couple years.
That's right. Yeah. The nonprofit is Strengthening Democracy Colorado, which I've recently learned is a mouthful of a name and maybe not the best to use. But we go by SDC. But it's a volunteer group. We've been moonlighting as people with a passion for good governance and public policy, as nerdy as that sounds. It started a few years ago. A good friend of mine from law school, Scott Cadiz, and recently a great organizer, Samantha Montgomery, who put together the Denver Tax March, have gotten together and to push reforms that, just to, you know, put it really simply, that look to make government work. We've seen gridlock from 2008 to 2016 during the Obama presidency. That was extremely frustrating. And we saw electoral results that didn't reflect on the popular vote, and other systemic issues that have kind of just frozen our government. And we think there are public policy explanations for at least a part of that, and they can have easy nonpartisan solutions in just restructuring our government. And a part of that is transparency. So that's what we're working on.
All right. And now, what was the motivation behind creating this nonprofit group back in 2015?
So personal stories, I come from a family with a disabled mom, and because of that, we felt like we didn't, and I eventually became a lawyer. So I had an interest in government from a long time, just based on my background and how it helped me out as a kid, give me opportunity. But I also know that my mom never felt like she, had a voice in government, that it worked for her. I don't think she voted until very recently for the first time in her life, because it's extremely difficult, and that's in the state of California. And so with that kind of personal perspective, and Scott has the same similar story, Samantha does too, we always had an interest in, why isn't this working? Why do people that we know and people who are a lot more vulnerable in our country feel like government doesn't work for them and it's not even worth their time to get involved? And so there's kind of picking up momentum. Like I said, I think everyone kind of became aware that, hey, something's wrong. This is just not working over the last decade, right? And being kind of nerds about policy, we read kind of a growing consensus about certain issues that were getting more and more prevalent and pronounced, like gerrymandering, voter ID laws that disenfranchise people, even structural stuff like the Electoral College or the filibuster, which is just a procedural rule that came to really override the kind of general law on how we thought government worked. And they swallowed the whole system and broke it down. And so we said, hey, everyone's feeling the same way, that this isn't working, we have to do something. And nationally, it was getting some attention, gaining some momentum in 2015, and we thought we could try to bring that national attention to Colorado, make sure it was highlighted, propose some ideas on what to do. And what we're really passionate about is also direct action. Like, hey, we're not just, you know, here to say this is what's wrong. We're here to say, here's how we can fix it.
Oh, absolutely. Now, your story is very inspiring, and, I'm glad to hear that your mother got out and vote, so
nice.
Good for her. But I do understand the situation that we have here, and it's kind of twofold. So it's either economic, it's either social, or it's physical. So we have people that live in certain demographics that either can't afford to get to a voting booth or a voting area, or they're disabled. They have other things that are marginalizing their mobility to get somewhere and just vote. Mm-hmm. So it feels like, and what I've heard from a lot of citizens, is that the government is making it harder for us to participate in a fundamental right. And so the whole point of existence for the SDC is to make the process easier for citizens that have an inherited right to vote, law-abiding citizens. Is that correct?
That's right. I'm glad, yeah, you took this conversation and used the key words, fundamental right. The Supreme Court has described our right to vote as our most fundamental right, our most sacred. It's an obvious reason why. We use that right to preserve all of our other rights. If a politician or a government is taking away our right to free speech, our due process rights, we use the right to vote. That's our last recourse to go and say, you're out of office.
Right.
So that right is inherent. It's fundamental. It's not a privilege. And I know that's, some people are putting that out there for a reason. It's not a privilege. And so with all of our rights, the government generally has to establish that they have a good reason for coming in and saying, hey, this is your right, but we need to inconvenience it here for this legitimate reason. And where they have to do it, that's fine. You know, don't scream fire in a movie theater. I got that. But with voting, they've fallen off. And it's really nonsensical, and it's really frustrating. There's a case about a voter ID law out of Indiana. I think it's Crawford v. Marion County, but I might be off on that. But that was basically the first case, at least in my mind, that really said, hey, voter ID laws are good to go without any rational support, any evidence that you have an in-person voter fraud. They actually lost kind of the factual dispute of showing any evidence. Not only did they not show any evidence of in-person voter fraud, but the opposite party in the case showed that there was none. This was a solution in search of a problem. The Supreme Court nonetheless said these voter ID laws are fine. And like you said, these are significant burdens, maybe not for me and you, but they are for people like my mom. And historically, they are for a giant segment of the population. In Texas, for example, they've got a voter ID law, and it's getting some grief, thankfully, in the courts. But basically, you have to go to several different offices to get the right paperwork to be able to vote. Now, these offices are in one county in Texas now. They've knocked down where they're at, the DMV. They've knocked down the hours for the DMV. And Texas is a giant state. So you've got people like my mom and indigent people or old people who aren't driving anymore or other explanations, students who don't have cars, who have to go 3 hours across the county during a work day where we want them to be working, right? But at the same time, hey, get a shift off of Walmart and McDonald's and get on a bus and drive 3 hours in a bus that costs money and time to get this paperwork. And meanwhile, the state doesn't even have a showing that they need, that they don't believe your identity, that they don't already have information on hand that establishes that you have the right to vote. You know, they can make you do all that when they already have paperwork. Someone who's filed taxes in the state for 20 years that they have in their electronic database, they're going to send you, you know, on a wild goose chase.
Right. And I call it the administrative ghost paper trail. So it's basically something that's created to create an invisible roadblock.
That's right.
More or less. Now, some of the initiatives I was reading on your website, one of them was trying to reinforce or at least get to a point where we can at least entertain the notion of automatic voting.
That's
okay.
Right.
If you renew your driver's license, if you are a registered voter and you have filed taxes, those should be two avenues to be able to connect you to your voting poll for your county, for your district, and you should automatically be enrolled, period, without having to reaffirm your ID every election cycle.
That's right. That's okay. One thing we're passionate about. And now I'll give Colorado some credit before I knock it down a bit. So in this country, Colorado does better than most states. It's easier to vote. We have very, you know, great county clerks. The DMV system is much easier in this country than it is in other states, or in this state than it is in other states in the country. That being said, that's a low bar. It's really unfortunate. So we have higher turnout rates and higher voting rates, registration rates than most states in the country. But compared to international comparisons, Iran's electoral turnout in their presidential election, a country we like to disparage, and for good reason sometimes, for their approach to democracy, had 70% turnout in their presidential elections. France just had an election, and I think they were at 72%. Those turnout rates are higher than they've been in this country since 1900. And I don't even think that's a good comparison because women didn't have the right to vote in 1900.
Right.
So really, those results there in a special election and in Iran were higher than we've ever had in this country. So what is a success in this country is a really low bar, and we really should set ourselves to a higher standard. And that includes Colorado. So something like automatic voter registration, where we do have a high rate of registration compared to other states in the country. The demographics that aren't registered, though, are our most vulnerable or marginalized historically populations. Meanwhile, we have all the information we need to register them at other government offices on hand already. And so we're sending these people out on errands that cost them, you know, time with their family, time from their job, and actual dollars when we have all that information. The government does. So they're saying, we're going to burden this right, but we don't even need to, you know, if we looked around in our file cabinets.
Absolutely. And now something that I think would probably be a good idea, and I think you guys may be doing something similar to this, and there are other organizations that are chiming in on this very important topic as well, is going to those who are marginalized and immobilized or disabled, getting their mail-in ballots, helping them fill them out. Now, I know that is illegal. We're not saying, telling people, we're not filling in ballots for people. We're not encouraging that. I want to make that very clear. But we want to go pick up the ballots from people once they have filled them out on their own and they've sealed the envelope, and just go knock on their door and say, hey, let me pick this up for you. Let me drop it off at the post office or your mail box, whatever's closer to your neighborhood. If you need a ride to a voter poll, if you need assistance, those are the kind of things that I'm seeing people discuss and trying to get momentum behind to help, especially with the midyears coming.
Yeah.
Getting people prepared for, you know, kind of like a grassroots activism, like what you guys are doing with SDC, to help mobilize people to go help those people that cannot help themselves.
That's right. Yeah, that's a fantastic thing you can do. If anyone's an you know, kind of aspiring activists are getting involved saying, hey, I don't like how this is shaping up. These are real concrete things you can do that get changed and really help people and help our democracy. And so SDC is trying to do that. We're working with other people to do voter registration drive training, and we'll be working on facilitating turnout too. But I do want to circle back to a great point you made earlier. You talked about kind of these invisible roadblocks that seem like they're not much, but when you have 100 of them, they really add up. The same thing is true with these types of things. So you kind of touched on, like, hey, we have to be careful with what's legal and what's not legal. There's a reason for that, too. Voter registration drives in this state are very difficult to do. They're very high risk for something like helping people vote. And so we really need to rethink policies like that, that keep people from being able to easily just help people participate in democracy. Just to make a story, or to provide a story on that aspect of things, Jeff Sessions, the Attorney General, rightfully got a lot of grief when he was nominated as a federal judge earlier in his career, and again during the nomination process now. One of the big reasons why, and something that I was a vocal opponent of his for, is because he prosecuted a man named Albert Turner in the 1980s, who was a civil rights activist and a casket bearer at Martin Luther King Jr.'s funeral. Albert Turner in the 1980s helped people register to vote, helped people get their ballots in the mail that were disabled, marginalized, you know, indigent, things like that. Jeff Sessions ran a case against him alleging that he was conspiring to commit voter fraud and voter impersonation, and he lost bad. There was no evidence for it, and I really questioned the evidence that even he had to get probable cause to look into Albert Turner. It was just a political witch hunt, in my opinion. And it's those types of things, that terrible legacy in history. People have gotten smarter about it, and maybe sometimes it's innocent mistakes, but that's what it ends up doing, is undermining democracy, frustrating participation in our government.
Absolutely. And we have to continue to engage and educate people, because I think that's where we're going to actually help turn this around. Right now, you all are listening to A Public Affair on KGNU. I am your host, Tish Buford. And again, we have Jason Legg from the Strengthening Democracy Colorado. He's the executive director there and one of the founding members. He's been in studio with us this morning discussing some of the challenges and some of the initiatives they are trying to create at SDC to help with transparency in our government and helping us have easier access to voting, have an easier access to information that should be readily available to the public, public officers of our government, and for those who are thinking into going into local, statewide, and national politics. My next question to you, Jason, is in regards to the tax return initiative that you guys have been speaking about. How much headway have you guys made on that so far?
We're really optimistic. It's a huge task. Thanks for bringing it up, because we could use any help we get. So we're an all-volunteer organization, and this is another thing. Usually the keys to our democracy to participate in it costs a ton of money, right? And so the tax return initiative we're working on would require all candidates for office in the state practically to disclose their tax returns. Now, we're not just targeting one politician. We're saying this is a norm that should become law, and it should be generally applicable to our candidates for office. It's just more information to make sure we have a healthy democracy and trust in our democratic institutions. So we're pushing the initiative after a House bill that was similar failed to make it law in the state. It's really popular, but to get it on the ballot for a vote, we need 140,000 signatures roughly. The legal requirement is 98,492, but you get a margin of error in there. What people have done in the past historically, I think one candidate from governor this year actually is throwing a bucket of money at it, $1 million to $5 million. They pay $5 a signature to these private people. We don't have that kind of money, and frankly, we'd rather not have that kind of money and not do it like that, not buy access to democracy. So a couple weeks ago, in conjunction with other groups, we've been getting volunteers together and saying, hey, if we can get a big enough volunteer network, people power can do this too. And it can be just a little bit from a ton of people, and we can get it done. And we've had great success. I think we're at like 500 volunteers. A petition section has 50 signature blocks in it. And so we're asking people to just take one section and maybe do that a couple times in the next 5 months. And if we can get enough volunteers asking their neighbors, their friends, people like that, we can get this done. We do need to keep expanding that network, but that's what we're trying to do. We're a couple weeks in. I think we've got a few thousand signatures already, which is great. And we've got events training people on how to circulate. and events on our Facebook page where we're saying, hey, we're going to go out here and try to get signatures. Come join us if you can. Get involved in what you can. And hopefully it'll be a success and a model to, you know, take action where government's not working in the future with other reforms, you know.
Absolutely. And part of some of the things that I have found inspiring, especially during this last election cycle, is how much passion people have about their government. And, you know, I would be the first one to admit this. We all, and it's not intentional, but we all become somewhat, inadvertently comfortable with our own neuroses.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not because we don't care or we don't have empathy for what's going on in the world, but sometimes we get comfortably dysfunctional. And until something shakes us to our core, you know, two things drive people's motivations, I find: fear and anger. Okay? And those are two of the same bedfellows. Now, if people are very happy and euphoric, they usually become complacent. But if people are scared and angry, they usually fall into action. So you're seeing a lot of average citizens, you know, push themselves and fall themselves into action because they feel to some degree that the government has been taken from them, either metaphorically or literally in some way that's affecting them personally or affecting others that they know. And so the fundamental right, getting back to what we started our discussion with this morning in regards to just voting and having transparency and having basic information, falls back in the hands of citizens. So with great organizations like yours, if we can provide support for those people who are interested in getting out and doing grassroots events like this, what would be the best way for them to get a hold of you?
Thanks for that question. I appreciate it. So the name is a mouthful, so that makes this harder than it should be. But we have a Facebook page and a website. On Facebook, if you just look, you search for Strengthening Democracy Colorado, you'll find us. Our website is strengtheningdemocracyco.org, and you can reach out to us directly with the contact tab on the website or with a message through the Facebook page, and we'll talk to you directly from there about how you can get involved. On the Facebook page, we also have a constant update of events we'll be at and are doing training. So if any of those work for you, that's great. But we realize we're asking a ton of volunteers. So I'm saying message me, because whatever is convenient for you, we'll make work. If you have a meeting that you say, hey, I can't get to you, but can you come to us? For example, we went down to Pueblo on Monday, and we'd love to. We love to see this excitement. It's what keeps us going, too, and to kind of make it as convenient as we can for people to get involved.
Oh, absolutely. Now, you guys are also working on ending political gerrymandering. And that's a big initiative. And North Carolina was just, rejected for their attempt to do that by the Supreme Court justices, which was a very positive move in the right direction. But redistricting and gerrymandering has been going on for years.
Mm-hmm.
And with the Voters' Right Act being abolished or pretty much not being renewed,
mm-hmm.
That's leaving voters and citizens even more vulnerable, especially in a very, particularly sensitive political climate. So what are you guys doing to address that? What ideas do you have in mind?
So it is. It's a big focus of ours right now to make sure people are educated on that, because it has such giant consequences. And then we have some reform ideas that don't give us credit where it's not due. There's some really smart people in other places that are pushing these awesome reform ideas. They're simple fixes for how to solve the problem. So we're educating people on the problem, and we like to talk about what the reform ideas are that are out there and what's worked. And we're saying, hey, if we do this, you guys get involved, we can do this next in Colorado in gerrymandering. One example, and it's going to the Supreme Court, let's hope that it becomes the law. Out of Wisconsin, there's a case that says, hey, gerrymandering's gotten so far that we think it violates the principle of one person, one vote. You're diluting votes so much that your election results are not representative. I think the party in Wisconsin that had took 75% of the vote, or maybe it's a little bit less than that, but a vast majority of the vote, lost the seats at stake in the legislature, mm-hmm. by a factor of like 10%. So, a 20% swing in what should have been the results, that's what happened. But a court out of Wisconsin said, hey, this is too far. You're basically taking away the meaning of people's vote with this gerrymander. They used a test that I think a retired political scientist put together. It's called the efficiency gap standard. Mm-hmm. And what that does is basically calculates wasted votes, which is, again, goes directly to the point of, hey, you're wasting votes. You're skewing our democracy, so it's not even giving people a meaningful vote. And so they created this great test, and it says if you waste too many votes, so outside of kind of a range of norms historically, then that's an illegal gerrymander, and that district is going to be overturned. That map drawing is going to be overturned. So we think it's great because it's really straightforward. It's simple math. And, you know, you can't argue about, and we like other ideas too, but sometimes it's, hey, put together a commission, and the commission's supposed to do it without partisan intent. But then you just argue, who's on the commission, you know? And there's still, that still can be a great fix. In Colorado, at the state registering level, there is such a commission, and it does a better job than the status quo elsewhere. So don't get me wrong, but we do like the efficiency gap because it takes that human element out of it. And at the same time, other people say go to an algorithm, a computer program, and that's the same conversation. Hey, who made the computer program? You know, whose algorithm are you talking about there? And then there are some considerations. We need our humans. We need our legislators or people to make consideration of. So to make sure that the 14th and 15th Amendment are protected, the Voting Rights Act is protected, we have to make sure that communities of interest, that historically marginalized communities, have effective representation through elections too. And so people need to give that specific focus when they're doing redistricting. And the efficiency gap allows both of those things.
Okay, very good. Now, just real quickly, I wanted to get your thoughts on something. There were two recent voter approved changes to our election system. And I wanted to get your thoughts on the impact on the voter integrity in Colorado. This is specifically in regards to Amendment 71, raise the bar, and the measure that allows unaffiliated voters to participate in the primaries.
Sure. I was opponent of Amendment 71. The problem they describe is legitimate. You don't want everything to have to go through the Constitution. There's some places that where laws are better as statutes. Our tax return disclosure initiative is a statutory change, so it's not subject to those additional requirements. But they're kind of missing the point of the problem, the actual root cause. So the reason people go to the Constitution with these changes is not because they think it should go in the Constitution either. It's because we have Tabor on the books already, and we have politicians in the legislature at times who may not support what are popular laws. And so people are worried that they'll be undone quickly. Those are the two root problems that needed to be solved. And to go to Amendment 71 and reform and try to address that problem in a way that makes that tool now inaccessible to anyone who basically doesn't have a ton of money is not how I would have preferred to see it done. And so everyone now, you know, the ideas are all great, but the actual application means that you're going to have to spend a ton of money to get around the whole state to gather these signatures from various Senate districts. People don't even know who it is that they target. And the people you're asking for signatures don't even know what district they're in to be able to track all this stuff. So that's the thoughts on Amendment 71. As far as unaffiliated voters being able to participate in the primaries, you know, I'm not going to let perfect get in the way of good with that. And I think that it was an important reform. Unaffiliated voters feel marginalized by not being able to have a say in who their candidates for office are. And that's the same type of thing that we target generally, which is that and then makes them feel like they don't have a voice in a democracy, that democracy is not representative for them. And so we prefer that they have a say in elections. And again, maybe there's a better way to do it, but this is better than the status quo beforehand.
So basically, it's a step in the right direction. It's not perfect.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, better than where we were before.
I agree with that.
Absolutely. Well, Jason, I want to thank you so much for coming in and joining us today on Public Affair Radio here on KGNU. And your organization is doing some great things in the community. And for those of you who are interested, if you would like to go ahead and volunteer and do some work in the community in regards to the areas of discussion that we brought up today on this morning show, please go ahead and look Jason up on Facebook. And I do assume that your website and all your information is located
That's
on Facebook.
Correct.
Great. Yep. Okay. Well, we have been discussing transparency in government today on Public Affair, KGNU Community Radio. I've been your host, Tish Buford, and our in-studio guest today has been Jason Legg of SDC, Executive Director. Again, thank you so much for joining us this morning, and good luck to you and your organization.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me and the work you do here.
I appreciate that very much, and KGNU is glad to have you in the studio today, and thank you all for listening this morning. Stay engaged, stay educated, and always stay ready. Thank you for listening.